Welcome into the Sports Objective. Beautiful, beautiful weekend, hopefully ahead. And with me right now is Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Dave. Hope you are.
I am. This is my grandmother's birthday. It's recording on Friday morning, December 4th. So I want to give a shout out to her, my mom's mom. And we called her Mama. So Mama would be, I believe, 97 today if she were alive. So very special day. I want to give her a shout out to her. I know you were very close to your grandparents, Bubba. Very special day for me, definitely. And Bubba, another thing to mention really quickly is today is the fifth anniversary of the firing of Ruffin McNeil. It was kind of like one of those moments, where were you when you got the news? Everybody remembers. I don't remember what I did yesterday, but I remember that day very, very well. I'm actually not too far away from when I found out the news. I'm about 5 minutes away from that very spot. So, anyway, hard to believe that it's been 5 years and the program is definitely, thankfully, heading the right direction, but wanted to mention that today.
Yeah, that's certainly a memory that do not want to relive, but I remember, like you do, exactly where I was. I was in the gym at Concord High School. It was during a little break early in the morning, and I remember getting an alert on my phone. I said, this has to be a joke, and there's no way that Ruff got fired. And once I found out that it was legit, I was, needless to say, very pissed off. Fortunately, we've moved on from that, and our program's trending in the right direction now under Coach Houston and staff. But Dave, very quickly, while we're giving birthday shout outs as well as other things of that nature, I'd like to wish Stacy a happy anniversary. Today is our 10th anniversary, 12-4.
Wow.
And 12-4 of 2010, and we got married. So hard to believe it's 10 years and two kids later. But happy anniversary to Stacy. And then also, we're a couple days late, but happy birthday to East Carolina basketball players Noah Farrakhan and Miles James.
Absolutely. By the way, are you going to at least take her to the McDonald's drive-thru to get her a Happy Meal tonight, or what, Bubba?
Yeah, no, I might splurge for that.
I'm joking. Bubba has got great taste. That's totally for people that don't know. We joke around a lot on the show. So I know that you will do a lot better than that because happy wife, happy life, as they say. If mama's not happy, nobody's happy. Definitely a big day yesterday with Thursday, the announcement, which we knew about. Thanks to our good buddy Stephen Igo from Hoist the Colors and other places, media reports. Blake Prohl declared for the draft. Bubba, I know that was a big day. It's great for him personally. I think that it's tough for the program, but at the same time, at that position, I think we're going to be okay. And no disrespect to Blake, and we're going to be pulling hard for him. And now I'm excited to see where he lands at them. Gives me even more reason to watch the NFL draft, buddy.
Yeah, and Blake Prohl had a tremendous career with the Pirates, playing those 3 years on the field, 2018 through 2020. Blake had 130 receptions for nearly 1,600 yards, and maybe nine touchdowns. I think the most touchdowns he had in the season was four, and that's what I was thinking of. But excellent career, some solid numbers, and a little surprised, to be honest, by the move. Wasn't so much surprised yesterday. We had heard, you know, from Stephen Igo and Hoist the Colors about 3 or 4 days ago that this was going to happen. But when I found it out then, was surprised. I thought he would at least come back for next year, if not two more years. I thought he would play 21, but that's not the case. He and his family decided to declare for the 2021 NFL draft, and nothing but well wishes for Blake Prohl and his family. Hopefully he'll get drafted and have an excellent career in the league.
Well, I trust his dad. He's one of the best receivers ever with Ricky Prohl, and I know he had the stint with the Panthers, but my thing is, this is what – I know you have to weigh out the odds, but my thinking was when I learned that, and you know this, I told you off-air, Bubba, but my personal feeling is that you would think that would – you know, obviously you have to look at – he's had injuries, so maybe that's what they're looking at. He's the healthiest he's ever been. He had a good season this year. But if you think about it, 21 and 22 for the Pirates are going to be huge years. I've been saying that all along. I'll stick by it until it's different. I just have a feeling that 21 is going to be very special for the Pirates. And you think that if you're 21 is a big year for the Pirates, they go back bowling, which I think they will. And who knows, the ceiling is a limit. I mean, the ceiling for the Pirates, I think, is probably 7 or 8 wins. That's my guess. But anyway, you would think that you would do that versus a 3-6 year, but they know better and they know what's best for their family. And so, like you said, good luck. We're not trying to second guess. It's just, you think that with the team we've got coming back. In other words, my point is, it's not like another year of Scotty Montgomery, or that next year's team is not going to have the kind of year that you would hope for. You feel like it's the opposite. The next couple of years are going to be huge years for the Pirates.
Yeah, I really think so. Hey, like Michael Jordan said, for Mike Houston and his coaching staff, the ceiling is the roof.
No question about it. So we're going to have a great season coming up. And Bubba, I know disappointing loss yesterday for the Lady Pirates as they lose to Georgia. They had, as you watched the game, I know they had a tight game and then things started to slip away in the fourth, right?
Yeah, the Lady Pirates were very competitive against Georgia for about 3 quarters. Like you said, a 6-point ball game there late in the third, 1.5 minutes to go. I tuned in early third quarter when we were making a run. I think we'd been down 9 at halftime. We got it to 6, about 5.5 minutes left in the third. And then Georgia pushed it out to 11. And then we chopped it back down to 6, but could not get any closer. And in the quarter plus that I was able to watch, just the thing that was really standing out is just we were not having good possessions offensively. We were throwing the ball away, making some careless passes. And I think we probably turned it over 3 or 4 consecutive possessions where we had a chance to really either tie or take the lead because we were only down 6 and did not have a shot for about 3 or 4 straight possessions.
Yeah, tough break for the Lady Pirates, but good to have LaShonda Monk back. And the good news is early in the season, and give a shout out to Kim McNeil. She's already had some tough competition. That's what you want in a non-conference and get you ready for the American. And Bubba, I'll tell you what, at one point last year, you're the stats guy, not I, but I believe we were like number 4 in the nation last year with steals. As far as the defense is concerned, last year we were way up there. And towards the end of the season, I can't remember which game it was, we were ranked that, but it's a whole new season. But my point is that the defense is going to be top notch. And once we get the having LaShonda back, and then when we have as far as the offense, defense usually is what's going to obviously win you games. And we got to score more points. But I think when you look at it, some more ladies, get them to step up. And I appreciate another program heading in the right direction. And who knows, it may not be too long down the road as well for you and I love competition. It could be tiddlywinks for East Carolina, and we're going to be pulling hard for them. It looks like that Kim McNeil and Corey, her husband, and everybody, the whole staff, have them head in the right direction.
Yeah, LaShonda Monk, her return is absolutely huge for a team that's struggling offensively. Yesterday she had 17 points in 26 minutes and provided some instant offense there in the third quarter when we were making a little push at Georgia. Hopefully this team will continue to come along. In the meantime, you mentioned defense leading to easy offense, and that's really going to be what they need to rely on. And they do an excellent job of forcing turnovers, so hopefully they'll have some live ball turnovers that will lead to fast break opportunities where we can get easy buckets, because it doesn't appear as though we're very efficient right now in the half court. Okay.
And Bubba, speaking of basketball for Williams Arena and for both the men's and women's, I know you commented it and I saw it too. Kudos to John Gilbert, Ryan Robinson and company. One of the things we've talked about is the brand for East Carolina, and they've done a nice job with graphics. And how about that wrap on the lower arena at Williams Arena?
Yeah, it looked very sharp on the ECU logo, our Adidas brand pattern with the swords, hourglass, et cetera. like what's on the side of the football pants. So it looks very sharp. And also, you know, other things such as ecupirates.com. Very well done, given the circumstances. Kudos to John Gilbert, Ryan Robinson, and the powers that be.
No question about it. Looks like that it's, we're doing something that we can control, and that is, as far as financially, it's something that we can look and all the little things. And then eventually, Bubba, it's going to – everything's cyclical, and this is a situation where I feel like that we will – things will get better for us and, in every way. 2020 has been absolute – it hasn't been heaven, for sure, the opposite of that. But the good news is things will get better. Once we start winning season tickets by the way, Bubba, folks, at some point I know we'll have a chance to buy season tickets, but I was talking to John Rouse at the Pirate Club the other day, and you still can give money to the Pirate Club as far as we believe. I want to mention that to folks before I forget. And they also have – you can still donate the score, so $52.38, or you're the math guy, $523.80 for some other donors if you want to do that. But they've had some – want to give a shout out to all the staff at the Pirate Club, Bubba. I love that about donate the score and all that. I think it's been a nice thing. You can call the Pirate Club at 252-737-4540, or you can go online, ecupirates.com, and find the Pirate Club. But nice job to them. I want to, anytime that we have something good going on for the Pirates, we're going to give them a shout out.
Yeah, as far as the We Believe campaign, I have not heard an update in the last week or so, I guess. But the last one I had heard there right around Thanksgiving, we had raised about $400,000, between $400,000 and $500,000. So we'll hopefully have an update there soon.
Yeah, I'll try to find out next week for sure, and we'll get another count for sure. Hey, Bubba, what about another thing to talk about is, as you know, I love college basketball, and I love our league. How about the American? It's been some nice games around the league so far.
Yeah, very quickly taking a look at the American. Obviously, Kelvin Sampson, what he's done at the University of Houston is certainly no secret to anyone. The Cougars are expected to be the front runner in the league this year, and the 17th ranked Cougars, at least I think that's where they're currently ranked. They may have risen even more. They are off to a 3-0 start. Most recently, they took down in-state foe Texas Tech, defeating the Red Raiders 64-53. And so just exactly what you would expect from Kelvin Sampson's ball club. SMU's off to a 3-0 start as well. Not as challenging of a schedule as Houston's, but they have defeated Sam Houston State, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and Houston Baptist. They've won each of those games by at least 27 points.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a struggle for the Pirates. Hopefully we can do well in the league this year. But certainly SMU is coming up on December 16th, not to get ahead of ourselves, but that's our very first American game on the road, Bubba.
Yep, tall task in the opener, but hopefully we'll continue to sharpen our sword between now and then.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be ready to go when it's time to head to Dallas.
No question about it. It's going to be a great great year for the Pirates. I really feel strongly. And by the way, Bubba, got a lot of great guests today. And I know that there's lots to talk about. You and I could be talking for hours, but we've got a lot of great guests to get to. So where would you like to start?
Absolutely. We have a jam-packed show for guests as we will talk last-minute football scheduling deals and then also coaching carousel in addition to previewing Saturday afternoon's matchup with the Radford Highlanders for ECU men's basketball. But we'll start off, Dave, talking about a top 15 matchup that's taking place down in Conway this weekend with number 8 BYU making a last-minute scheduling addition to travel and play number 14 Coastal Carolina. Both teams will put their perfect records on the line, and let's talk about that with Jake Edmonds of KUTV 2 News from Salt Lake City.
Well, guys, there's a big matchup on Saturday in college football, right, Bubba?
Absolutely. And, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted college football in so many ways, and games being scheduled in a matter of days, and a top 15 matchup taking place down in Conway, South Carolina. And right now, to talk about
number 8 BYU traveling to play number 14 Coastal Carolina. Welcome in from KU TV 2 in Salt Lake City, Jake Edmonds.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Jake, wanted to have you on. Great turnaround. BYU doing fantastic this year. And who would have ever thought another surprise this year for college football has been Coastal Carolina. And lo and behold, there's going to be a big game Saturday with two of the best stories in college football for the COVID year.
Yeah, and this is the year to do it, I feel like, with as down as this year has been with COVID and everything. You know, this is the year for teams like BYU and Coastal Carolina and even, you know, like a Cincinnati to make a statement with teams like Ohio State playing, you know, less than six games. You've got Pac-12 barely playing any games. And so this is kind of the year for a G5 or, a lower independent team to make a statement.
You guys, short turnaround here to get ready for Coastal. Yeah, I guess you guys didn't know you were playing the game until yesterday or today. Coastal runs a unique offense, a little option to what they do. Not a true triple option, but a spread option. How do you think it's going to affect the Cougs not having ample time to prepare for Coastal's unique offense that BYU really hadn't seen anything quite like it this year? With apologies to Navy.
Yeah, they actually started practice last night. Well, started preparation for Coastal Carolina. They've been practicing all week. But they started practice for Coastal Carolina last night, kind of with the anticipation that they'd be playing. But it's going to be a test for them. They haven't really faced an offense like Coastal Carolina's. I know they like to spread it out and they kind of go small. BYU's got a big front. And Coastal Carolina's offense is kind of designed to negate that because they don't really allow pressure. So BYU's defense is better than in years past. They've got the secondary. Their linebackers aren't as great as they've been in the past, but they like to run a no pressure defense. They don't really blitz anybody. They rush three, and then they basically put everyone else back on zone. And so if they can swarm to the ball, you know, no matter where it goes, I know it goes horizontal a lot, but if they can swarm to the ball, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, and that defense, that type of defense you're talking, a more or less zone-based defense, when you're having to get ready for a unique offense without ample time to prepare for it, that's probably the defense you want to be playing.
Yeah, and it really is a lot of – I mean, I'm not an X's and O's guy. It looks a lot of just base defense.
See ball, get ball.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let anything get behind you. I mean, that's really the secondary's job is to keep the offense in front of them, keep the ball in front of them.
Yeah, as you take a look at this matchup, BYU is obviously allowed only in excess of 20 points just once this season. And that was against Houston when they allowed 26. And then Coastal Carolina, they scored more than that in at least, I think, maybe every game except one. So very intriguing, especially the quick turnaround.
Yeah, and again, this defense has been better than in years past. I mean, in years past, they had given up chunk yards. And, you know, it was almost – I don't want to say they lacked effort, but it just seemed like there were plays where maybe a player here would take off and the opposite offense would, you know, expose that. But this year, you know – and granted, the talent level hasn't – of the opponents so far this year haven't been – nearly as good as they've been in years past, but you know, like a Boise State is typically a team that scores 30, 40, 50 on teams in the Mountain West. And BYU really held them to like 3 points, I think, for most of that game. And then they scored two touchdowns late to make it 17. But, you know, BYU's they've gone up against, you know, lesser offenses than they have in the past, but you look at Houston, you look at Boise State, you know, they were able to keep them to lower than – I think Houston was lower than their season average. I know Boise State was for sure. So BYU's faced decent offenses, and they've done okay.
And, Jake, obviously one of the things that comes to mind is the fact that BYU is such a national brand. I know that the Cougars, the program likes to come out east because there's a lot of BYU fans that they can come to the game, and this particular case – What better place than you're in December, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina?
Yeah. It's kind of funny, though. As much as they like to travel everywhere, they've struggled in the East Coast. Even games they've won, like, you know, years ago they played Ole Miss in their season opener. And even though they won the game, it you know, came down to like a strip sack fumble recovery in the end zone. They lost to Eastern Carolina. Was it last year, 2 years
ago? No. Oh, my God.
East Carolina.
What? Yeah, East Carolina.
You know what? I did that too. I did that too earlier. Even this year, I said Northern Alabama. It's North Alabama, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. It is East Carolina. Sorry, you have to pay a $500 fine. You can make the check payable to the Pirate Club.
Just edit that out. Edit the earn part. I know you
So the Cougs have struggled on the East Coast. Yes, they did, and they did lose to East Carolina when we had Scotty Montgomery as the head coach, which means that was a really bad loss. So playing at Coastal this weekend, as you know, we talked about before we started recording, BYU is not eligible for the Group of Five bowl slot, which I wish some ESPN analysts would get that through their heads, but they can get a New Year's Six bowl as an at-large. And a win over Coastal would help with that big time to try to get them in a New Year's Six Bowl. Or if not a New Year's Six Bowl, it maybe just – if they don't get a New Year's Six Bowl, improve their bowl standing. Bowl season is weird this year anyway.
Yeah. And BYU's athletic director, Tom Holmo, was actually just talking to the media like 20, 30 minutes ago. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know, BYU's got kind of a unique relationship with ESPN. It's, you know, like ESPN has relationships with conferences, but they also have relationships with BYU as an independent. And so Tom said that, you know, ESPN's going to make sure that they play in a bowl game regardless of what happens. Because, you know, a lot of teams, even if they're eligible this year, they're not going to be able to play in bowl games. There's just not enough.
Yep.
And so BYU's playing in a bowl game. We just – you know, if they win this game, I think it's going to be really hard for the committee to keep them out of the top 11 or 12. And then, you know, obviously they play San Diego State next week and we'll see what happens after that. But I think 11 or 12, maybe, you know, maybe they even need to get to 10 to make a New Year's Six bowl game. If they don't, for whatever reason, if they're not selected into a New Year's Six, I'd imagine it'd be like a, maybe like a potato or, you know, something obviously smaller. They don't want that. They want a New Year's Six. But either way, they're making it into a bowl game.
You could always come back to Conway and play in the Myrtle Beach Bowl.
I'm fine with that. If they send me, hopefully my station sends me to something like that.
Yeah, I think you guys, and it is, we're down 9 bowl games now, I think, have been canceled.
Well, and so the Vegas Bowl just canceled too. That's traditionally been a bowl game when they were BYU was in the Mountain West. That was a game that they would go to quite a bit.
What bowl game was that?
The Las Vegas Bowl.
Yes, that was number 9 yesterday. So I don't, you know, it'll be interesting to see who goes where. And one thing that I do think will help with the bowl situation is some of these MAC schools that are playing 6 and 7 game schedules. You know, I think some of them, I don't know how you determine their bowl eligibility, if they're 3-3 or 4-3 or, and I do think some schools are just going to opt out of not going to bowls also. So I think maybe that'll help with the lack of bowl games. It's a weird time we're living in, but obviously a win over Coastal is going to help BYU's bowl status big time.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, a lot of national, for some reason, I feel like the national guys should really know that BYU's not aiming for a G5 spot. They're not aiming for that G5 auto bid. It's Cincinnati's. Essentially, unless Cincinnati were to climb into the playoffs.
Well, I'll tell you, if Cincinnati stumbles and Coastal upsets you guys this weekend, right, it would be Coastal's spot.
Which is why I think, you know, obviously Coastal had this game scheduled against Liberty, and Liberty would have been a fine opponent, and I don't think, you know, I don't think a win would have necessarily hurt Coastal, but I do think that they wanted BYU. When Liberty started showing signs of COVID and their counts started rising, I think Coastal really wanted that BYU matchup because, like you said, if Cincinnati stumbles, then that G5 spot is still up for grabs. And, you know, I think Cincinnati might have to stumble really hard because what are they, seventh right now?
And I believe the last time, and it could be, you guys might want to check this, but I believe in the playoff rankings, isn't Marshall also ahead of Coastal? Am I wrong on that?
I don't remember.
I believe that's correct, Kyle. I think Marshall is 15th. I'm looking.
Okay. So yeah, so Marshall has some saying it too, but they're not going to have a sexy opponent. Like, you know, Cincinnati's going to get Tulsa, who's in the top 25, and obviously now Coastal gets BYU. Whereas Marshall, I don't know who they're going to end up playing for the Conference USA Championship, but it's not going to be anybody attractive. UAB, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, Marshall's 21 right now.
Yeah.
Coastal's 18. So I think Coastal's kind of in the driver's seat. I don't really know. I don't follow Marshall or Coastal very well, but I don't know who they have left. But I mean, playing and beating a BYU team, you know, top 15 BYU team, I think that elevates Coastal. What, they're 18?
Yeah, definitely.
Top 15 for sure.
If Coastal's already ahead of Marshall in the playoff standings, and beating BYU would solidify them being the number two, because after BYU, Coastal would be playing Lafayette for the Sun Belt Championship. So,
yeah, we talked about the matchup, you know, with the Coastal Carolina unique offense against BYU's defense. And how about the quarterback matchup in this one? You know, you have Grayson McCall, 20 touchdowns and just one pick, and then Zach Wilson, video game like numbers for BYU, 25-2. So two of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country.
Yeah, and you know, you'll hear a lot about, I mean, you guys obviously, I'm sure, have heard about strength of schedule and yeah, but who's he going up against? And you know, if you actually watch these quarterbacks play, you know, there's a reason why Zach Wilson is right now one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the NBA draft projections or NFL draft projections. You know, he's making throws that are, you know, 60 yards downfield effortlessly, you know, off his front foot. He's not really even stepping into it. You know, he's got the arm, he's got the decision-making. I think maybe his passer accuracy is improved because the defenders aren't as great, but he's still putting it in spots that, you know, NFL quarterbacks do. I don't know much about Coastal. I haven't looked at a lot of film of Coastal's quarterback specifically, but I imagine it's the same deal with him. It's what bugs me the most is when people say, okay, but who do they play against? The counter to that is, did you actually watch that quarterback play? Like, have you actually seen that quarterback play and make those throws?
Yeah, no doubt. And the schedule is what it is. You know, nobody can blame BYU of any team for their schedule this year. I mean, they as an independent were lucky to put together the schedule they did with getting the opportunities to play Houston and Boise and San Diego State and now Coastal. And, you know, as these Pac-12 schools were scheduling non-conference, I guess Colorado didn't want to play BYU last weekend.
Well, there were a couple teams on the table. I mean, so the timeline was Washington had reached out to BYU when they learned that the Apple Cup was canceled. So they weren't playing Washington State. And so they were looking for a team. They reached out to BYU. And the reports are that BYU said, we want to wait. Whether that's we want to wait for the CFP poll to come out, or we want to wait until maybe another team reaches out to us. Either way, they wanted to wait. And they came back to the table on Monday with Washington, and they were close to working out a deal. I mean, the sources that I've talked to, that's what they've said, that it was pretty much in the 11th hour of working out a deal, and then something happened. And if you watch the CFP poll, the first CFP poll show that came out on ESPN, they interviewed Kalani Sitake, and he wouldn't get into it. They asked him specifically what happened, and he said, I'll tell you, we weren't afraid of that game. You know, that's specifically, he said, no. We didn't duck that game. We weren't afraid of it. Things just didn't work out. And, you know, I can go into speculation mode and say that, you know, Washington may have gotten word that that the Utah-Arizona State game was going to get canceled, and so they backed out. BYU could have very well backed out because of the Pac-12 stipulations. I don't know if you know about the Pac-12 stipulations on scheduling out of conference games this year, but they're pretty ridiculous. And so that could have turned BYU off. There's a lot of different factors, but I mean, I think at this point we know that BYU is, you know, they're looking for games and they're willing to travel and even at a late moment's notice.
San Diego State next weekend after Coastal, is that going to be it, or are they going to try to find somebody to play on the 19th?
Well, there's an opening. Yeah, like you said, I haven't heard of anything yet. I mean, these were kind of this upcoming Saturday and then last Saturday, those were kind of the two days that were circled on the calendar for games for Tom Holmo to schedule. And you know, he was fortunate to get a team like Coastal Carolina. I think at this point, fans were hoping for anything. I mean, even like I don't want to throw any team under the bus, but like even like a UMass or, you know, yeah. I think they were willing to play just about anybody. I think if they play with this Coastal Carolina game, there's maybe less urgency for them to schedule a game on the 19th. I think the team would love to play another game. But you know, there has to be an opening. That's been the whole thing with the schedule is, you know, you have to find a team willing to play you. You have to find a team willing to agree to your terms or you agree to their terms. And it's just been hard. And I don't think the 19th will be much different. The only difference now is that you have a Coastal team already on the schedule, which maybe reduces that kind of sense of urgency.
All right. Thank you very much, Jake. Appreciate it. And a great effort, I think, for them to get that game. And tough breaks, Bubba. I want to mention this really quickly about for Liberty, right?
Yeah. I hate it for Coach Freeze and the Flames. It's a shame. I had seen where Malik Willis, their talented dual threat quarterback, was going to be out, and that was bad enough. But unfortunately, due to COVID-19 issues, they will not even be able to play the ball game. So hopefully that program can get back on solid footing in terms of their health and be able to, play in a bowl game. They should be able to get a pretty solid bowl game. But you know, if they would have been able to take on Coastal Carolina, who knows?
Oh yeah, yeah. What a tough break, but that's 2020, right? So as the saying goes, it is what it is. I know Terry Gallagher hates when I say that term, but anyway. Do you want to go on to our next guest?
Next, we'll talk about Southern Miss and the first FBS job that came open this year. We'll get alternate perspectives. Their new head coach, Will Hall, is coming from Tulane, where he spent the last two seasons as offensive coordinator. And let's hear right now from the second-year play-by-play voice of the Green Wave, Andrew Allegretti.
The first FBS job to come open this year was at Southern Mississippi way back in September after week one when Jay Hobson was let go. And right now, very excited to have with us the Tulane play-by-play voice, Andrew Allegretta, to talk about the hiring of Will Hall.
What's going on, guys? Happy to talk.
Thanks for coming back on. And talk about this hire for Southern Miss. How do you feel about it?
Well, I can talk about it from Coach Hall's perspective and what I feel like he brought to the Tulane offense. I think it was something that was much needed for Tulane's offense. They had been running the triple option or some variation of it during the first three seasons with head coach Willie Fritz. And, you know, as Tulane augmented the athletic ability on the field, I think Coach Fritz was recognizing that the offense needed to move forward as well. And that's exactly what Coach Hall did here at Tulane. I think the past two seasons for Tulane have really been the best couple of offensive seasons since the 1998 team. And that's quite frankly because of the strategy, the play calling ability, and just the philosophy of Coach Will Hall. So he's going to bring that sort of unique offensive ability to Southern Miss. And he's a Mississippi guy. He's from Amory, Mississippi, which is, I think that's closer to Northern Mississippi than Southern Mississippi, but he understands the heritage and the tradition of that program. So he's going to put his heart and soul into it.
Yeah. Coach Hall, a successful Division II head coach before he went to become OC at Tulane, very successful as a matter of fact. And like you said, he kind of, you know, Willie Fritz has always been a triple option type guy. And there's still some elements of that. And what Coach Hall was running at Tulane as OC. I think it was only a matter of time before Coach Hall became a head coach at the FBS level. I can't imagine coming from Tulane, from an American Conference school, and getting an opportunity now to go up to Conference USA to Southern Miss. You know, it wasn't too long ago that Southern Miss would have never considered hiring an OC from Tulane. So it kind of shows where Tulane has elevated their program. And it's a nice, you know, you don't see that too often that an offensive coordinator at the American level gets another Group of Five job as a head coach.
Well, first off, I think we should all collectively as American Conference folks these days be very specific with our verbiage. And I think you said going up from the American to Conference USA. Not these days, right? American clearly has established itself.
Well, when you're an offensive coordinator going up, you're going up anywhere when you become a head coach.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You know, I think the rivalry between Tulane and Southern Miss makes this interesting. The battle for the belt is, for Tulane, probably one of the strongest rivalry ties that they have. Tulane fans will talk about LSU, but that's kind of a different deal. All of those years in Conference USA together between Tulane and Southern Miss, it's not exactly like Auburn hiring someone from Alabama or Clemson hiring someone from South Carolina. It's not that sort of thing, but there is some tension there. To your point, though, what Coach Hall has done at Tulane is very unique. I think a lot of the local media down here was kind of going through it, and they were trying to find the last time an assistant coach got a head coaching job from Tulane. And I think you had to go back to the 80s. There's been, you know, a couple of examples when head coaches would do that. Tommy Bowden from 1998 going to Clemson comes to mind very quickly, but it has not historically been this place where other schools look to for their next head coach in the way that an Alabama would be because of Nick Saban. So Coach Hall has very much blazed his own path. And I do think you have to give plenty of credit, as I always do, to Willie Fritz, who's a head coach that empowers his coordinators. He's very much a CEO type of a head coach. He's not going to micromanage anybody. So that combination of a CEO and Willie Fritz and the mind of Will Hall was a really good combination for 2 years here in Uptown.
Yeah, and obviously, good fit for Southern Miss, being a Mississippi guy, being in Tulane, down in New Orleans the last couple of years, just down the road. So still recruiting similar areas when he goes up to Hattiesburg. Rumors, speculation that he may bring the O-line coach at Tulane, I don't know his name, you will, up as OC at Southern Miss with him. A chance, is there any chance that the coach would promote him, the Fritz would keep him and promote him to offensive coordinator at Tulane? What are you hearing there?
So here's where I would go with that one. First off, Cody Kennedy is the offensive line coach that you're referring to. Coach Hall and Coach Kennedy are extremely tight, not just good friends. They are extremely tight. They're the coaches that they're the ones that go to get lunch together every single day. When Coach Hall came to Tulane, his one stipulation for Coach Fritz was, I need my guy, Cody Kennedy, as the offensive line coach. So I think if he continued to follow Coach Hall to Hattiesburg, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, in terms of terminology and designations, is Cody Kennedy going to become the offensive coordinator at Southern Miss? You know, I don't know. I suppose it's possible. I think what's incredibly obvious, I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if Coach Hall doesn't call plays as the head coach at Southern Miss. It's not something that maybe he'll do his entire career, but most of these coaches, when they get their first swing, will call the plays, especially if they're an offensive-minded coach. I can think to Justin Fuente. As you guys know, I've got a history with Virginia Tech, and when Coach Fuente went from TCU as the offensive coordinator to Memphis, he called the plays at Memphis to start things off. So I would think that Coach Hall calls the plays. So whether you want to give Cody Kennedy the OC or not, I don't know. Is it possible he stays in Uptown? I think that's possible too. I don't know, but I certainly know that the relationship with Cody Kennedy and Coach Hall is not just good. It's like brothers.
Yeah, but you know, like brothers, but money talks. And OC, you know, if he's not going to get the OC title, you're only going to have so much of a budget at Southern Miss. And Tulane would be able to pay him more money as offensive line coach than Southern Miss would his offensive line coach. So I would think he would almost have to get the OC title just from a money standpoint for it to make sense. Then again, sometimes even if you're taking a pay cut, if that guy's like your brother, you may be better off just sticking with the relationship.
Yeah, they're brothers, guys. So if I had to put a few nickels down, first off, I don't think there are published reports. It is by no means official, and I don't have any inside information, although I would say it makes sense that Chip Long is the next offensive coordinator at Tulane, former offensive coordinator at Notre Dame, and college roommate of Will Hall. So if that's the case, then, you know, Cody's obviously not going to become the offensive coordinator here. And I don't think he would be anyway, because I don't think he's ever really called plays or done anything other than been an offensive line coach throughout the course of his career. Cody Kennedy's just 31 years old, guys. Keep that in mind. Very bright, rising star in the industry. But for where Coach Willie Fritz is in his career, that's probably not the move that he would make at this moment in Tulane's history. And again, Cody Kennedy and Coach Hall, they're not brothers, guys, but they're brothers.
Gotcha.
And Andrew, I'm talking about excellent hires, kind of shifting gears on you here a little bit before we let you go. You know, Tulane had an excellent hire in Ron Hunter prior to last season, I guess it was, on the basketball side of things. And just an excellent start for them, 2-0 with victories over Lamar and Lipscomb. And Lipscomb has had some good basketball programs in recent seasons, and they are actually scheduled to take on Southern Miss on December 9th, unless something is added between now and then.
Yeah, college basketball is going to be whatever we thought of college football. College basketball has already proved to be crazier. There's so many changes with college basketball that I don't know how many changes there have been. It is daily. It is regular. So we'll see. But yeah, Ron Hunter has done a nice job. He is going to have a very slow build in the way that Willie Fritz has had a slow build here at Tulane. The Lipscomb win, as you mentioned, is a good one. The Bisons are picked to finish first in the A-Sun. They have the preseason A-Sun Player of the Year and their post player. So that's a good program. And the fact that Tulane got the win is you know, really strong for Ron Hunter. He has more pieces this season. It's a totally, totally, totally revamped roster, but they've got athletic freshmen that you can see are pretty strong building blocks for the future, and they've got a couple of nice pieces that transferred. I don't know how they'll do throughout the course of conference play. You know, I also don't know how strong the American Conference is. Like, I don't know that Cincinnati is the power that they used to be outside of maybe Houston, SMU, one or two others. The middle of the league looks incredibly intriguing, and that includes East Carolina. I think you guys still have Jaden Gardner, yes?
Correct. Jaden Gardner is a junior.
Yeah, because you guys still have Jaden Gardner, and Tulane's got some of these pieces. I don't know how everybody's going to finish, but the middle of that conference looks terribly compelling to me. So, you know, maybe an opportunity for Ron Hunter to surprise some people this season.
Yeah, Pirates also 2-0 and had a nice win at Charlotte to start the season. So I'm with you. I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of parity in the conference this year.
Yeah, I think Memphis, SMU, and Houston probably have established themselves as the three top teams in the conference, and Cincinnati is always in the mix. And look, it's a weird season, and kind of four teams feels like the American Conference number to make the NCAA tournament. So if you're talking about an East Carolina Tulane, goodness, been a long day here, whether it's the South Florida of the world, the Wichita States of the world, whoever, I don't know that they're going to be NCAA tournament teams or not. But I certainly think we've got ourselves the makings of a very compelling conference season.
No doubt about it. And Andrew, before we let you go, tell folks how they can listen to your work and also follow you on social media.
Yeah, so a big game for Tulane coming up on Saturday, Tulane versus Memphis. It's a noon Eastern kickoff for the folks outside of the Crescent City. Tune in radio. The Tune in radio app is always the best place to go check it out. And hey, look, I'll give a plug to the podcast, because even for East Carolina fans, I think it would be worth checking out. I sat down and did a 40-minute conversation with our athletic director yesterday that we posted today to our podcast called The Current. which you can find in all of the typical podcast places. A lot of stuff about name, image, likeness, how the budgets have been affected because of coronavirus, his thoughts on the American Conference and how it continues to establish itself as trying to get into the college football playoffs, what that looks like for Cincinnati, so on and so forth. So I'll plug that as well, guys.
Greta.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate you, buddy, very much for all that you've helped us out this year and for the inside slant. And that's a great hire for Southern Miss. And Bubba, I know that we've got the Southern Miss perspective, right?
Yeah, love catching up with Jamie Arrington from To the Top Talk. They do an excellent job covering the Golden Eagles. And let's go to that conversation right now with Jamie Arrington.
Well, we talked to the Tulane side of things. Now we're going to get the Southern Miss perspective on the new coaching hire, right, Bubba?
Absolutely. Will Hall hired as the new Southern Miss head football coach. And right now to get the Golden Eagle perspective, welcome in from To the Top Talk, Jamie Arrington.
So you got the Tulane perspective. Now you wanted the truth. Is that what I'm gathering?
There you go. Jamie, talk about, Will Hall comes over as office coordinator from Tulane, successful there as OC. Prior to that, was a successful head coach at the Division II level. So what is the initial reaction down in Hattiesburg to the hire?
I think from the folks that actually follow football, I think that everyone is super excited. You know, it isn't a name hire, a splash hire like some other names that have been thrown about during the process. But as far as the fit goes, I'm not sure you could have gotten a better fit. I fully expect and I think – personally, that Will Hall is the person who could come in and make the biggest splash recruiting-wise immediately. And he has all kind of connections in the Mississippi area. He's whooped our ass at Tulane in a lot of recruiting battles in our immediate vicinity. So I fully expect him to make it a splash as far as recruiting goes. But, you know, he's also a really solid head coach during his time at the D2 level at West Alabama and West Georgia. I mean, you're looking at what he had, two Gulf South Coach of the Year awards, three Gulf South championships, was in the playoffs four times, and that's all out of 6 years with a 56-20 record ultimately. And then he had some success as an offensive coordinator. You know, his stint at Louisiana didn't go great, obviously, with what all happened there, but – he goes on to Memphis as an associate head coach and tight end coach. And in the past two seasons at Tulane, he has significantly improved the Tulane offense, even given their deficiencies at quarterback. They came into Hattiesburg this year and tore us a new one, the most points ever scored on Southern Miss in the Rock, and the vast majority of that was on the ground. So I think this is a guy that can come, that knows the area very well. I think this is a guy that's proven himself as a coordinator and a head coach. And I think it's a really solid fit for the Golden Eagles.
What do you think of his offense? You know, he runs some option, but he spreads it out and passes it out of it. How do you guys think you guys will embrace that style of offense down there?
You know, it will be different from what we've run recently, obviously. But I'm not so certain. I mean, I know we're going to run the ball a lot more, but I think he's also going to incorporate the passing game. It just depends on who he's able to get at quarterback here. But you've got a guy like a Frank Gore Jr. Who will have a blast in this offense. I mean, you watch schematically about how he lines it up and how he does it. You know, a lot of the H-backs, a lot of the tight ends, and a lot of different motions with that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I think it almost gives us a little bit of a differentiating feel in Conference USA right now.
You mentioned his time at Louisiana under Huxbeth. Do you know how their relationship is? Huxbeth isn't coaching anywhere right now. Is that relationship good? Any chance he joins the staff?
You know, I haven't heard any chatter of that. And, I guess nothing's out of the question right now. I've heard a lot of rumors about who may and may not be joining his staff, but, I would think ego-wise that would be a tough pill for Huxbeth to swallow. But at the same time, you know, nothing's out of the question right now.
You know, interesting, I don't know how much you followed this, but Huxbeth actually was the head coach at Austin Peay last year and had a great year and then got fired there for some off-the-field stuff. And now your interim head coach is the head coach at Austin Peay. So it'd be interesting if Huspeth did end up on the staff.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that Scotty Walden's going to do a good job up there. I mean, I think he's a guy with a bright future. I just think the time at Southern Miss was not right, given the circumstances.
No, I'm with you. I think Walden's a good coach, and I would have been interested to see how the season would have played out if he would have stayed head coach and rather than going ahead and leaving for Austin Peay, if he would have flirted with 5 or 6 wins. But I do think he probably wasn't quite ready for the Southern Miss or the FBS spotlight. And I think Austin Peay's a good place for him to get his feet under him and maybe take that stab at an FBS job, you know, 3 to 5 years down the road.
Absolutely.
Jamie, you were talking about recruiting, and with he being a Mississippi guy and obviously having the connections with Louisiana, there's one good thing about Southern Miss is you guys with geography with a lot of great players, and they all can't go to Alabama or Auburn or LSU.
No, absolutely. And you think about the past few years under Jay Hobson, and God love him, you know, but we were kind of sold that we were going to shore up recruiting in Mississippi, and it just didn't happen. We took a different approach, sending out just ridiculous amounts of blanket offers around the country, and it just didn't end up working out for us. And meanwhile, some of these guys that were in our immediate vicinity went other places that you would think we would be able to snag them, you know? So I'm excited about Hall. And another thing, you mentioned the ties to Louisiana. We kind of built our foundation and our success on that Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida Panhandle pipeline. That was kind of where everybody came from. And we really took a hit in Louisiana, you know, particularly in the past decade. You know, we had a lot of guys come out of Louisiana that went on to bigger and better things. You think about guys like Patrick Surtain, DeQuincy Scott, I mean, so forth and so on. And we really haven't done a good job there. But I'm most excited right now about seeing what we can do in Mississippi, because there's always a lot of talent here. You know, there have been difficulties in the past with a lot of players qualifying, particularly in a lot of these rural areas. But if that's something they can get under wraps, there's a lot of talent to be had here in the home state.
Yeah, and you guys, you know, you talk about recruiting, and one thing I wondered with Southern Miss, obviously, you know, you guys kind of got left in Conference USA. All your old rivals are in the American now, and I know that, you know, the fan base is kind of, it's not a good thing for the fans. And how do you think the rise of the Sun Belt in schools like Louisiana and South Alabama has affected Southern Miss in recruiting? Because used to, you'd laugh at those Sun Belt schools, and now with their ESPN exposure and facilities in Louisiana and South Alabama, for example, you know, they're not a laughing stock anymore. And they're, yeah, how much has that affected Southern Miss recruiting?
I think it's affected us in a major way, because you have a lot of those guys that you would normally get to come to Hattiesburg, and there's a lot more competition for those players. And, you know, even in the AAC, I mean, those were teams that if there was a player out there in this immediate vicinity, you were going to Southern Miss, they were coming to Southern Miss before they'd go to a Memphis or a UAB or UAB, Tulane, teams like that. So now, I mean, you're kind of playing second fiddle to a lot of these teams. So it's something that the fan base certainly isn't used to. It's something that I'm hoping that we can turn around. And, you know, I think that we as Golden Eagle fans got spoiled with being able to do some of the things that we were able to do over the years and build the tradition that we have with a shoestring budget. And it's kind of become a glaring weakness when you look at the program now. We to be able to compete, we're going to have to spend more money. And I think that our athletic director, Jeremy McLean, has done a good job in securing some funds to increase the coaching pool for the assistants and the head coach. So we should be, you know, my understanding is we should be a top five Conference USA team as far as pay goes with this new contract, but I'm not sure exactly what it entails just yet.
Have you heard anything about the staff being put together?
I've heard different rumors. The only thing that's kind of been confirmed, of course, is well, I say confirmed, but to where it seems possible is his offensive line coach from Tulane. And then there was an article yesterday in Football Scoop where they mentioned a couple of names, but I haven't heard anything definite yet. I would expect after his game this weekend with Memphis some of that information will start trickling out. You know, his press conference here at USM is going to be on Monday in the morning. So after that happens, I kind of expect to see some information come out as far as a staff, as well as some possible, you know, commits coming in the next few weeks. And I think there's going to be some transfers that are going to transfer into Southern Miss. I've heard some rumors, particularly on kids from the area at certain Power Five schools that will be coming back to are expected to be coming back to Hattiesburg now. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Jamie, I told you on Wednesday evening when we were setting up this interview how much I love the hire, and there's certainly many reasons why that's the case, but and one of those is what you've already referenced. There's no substitute for being a head coach, and he did so very successfully. And Will Hall won nearly 75% of his games in those 2-3 year stints of those schools, and just I think about guys like Chris Creighton at Eastern Michigan and Lance Leipold, who were very successful on the non-Division I levels. And I really think it's going to pay off for Southern Miss.
I appreciate that. I do too. And I will also say that, you know, it's one thing to hire a coach that wants to be a head coach. It's another one that it genuinely seems like he wants to be here. From some of the other coaches that I've spoken to, you know, this was kind of mentioned as a dream school for him back in 2016, the last time the job came open. So, who's to say how long the tenure will last, so forth and so on. But right now, this is a guy that legitimately wants to be in Hattiesburg. So, and that certainly means a lot.
No doubt about it, Jamie. To the Top podcast, tell folks how they can follow your work. And I know that you guys are on Apple and other certainly podcast players and the big boys, if you will. But where can they find you?
On the major platforms, iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. You can follow us. My website has links to all of those, jamiearrington.net. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and all the like at To The Top Talk.
Thank you very much, Jamie. He's been with us. In fact, he helped us out with the John Gilbert, if you remember that, the AD. We knew that he was going to be the new AD for – we were right for a solid week. Remember, Bubba?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was hard to believe that that's been 2 years ago now. But
yeah,
but
speaking of,
go ahead.
Yeah, that he was. Sorry, I was just going to say. Speaking of anniversaries, yesterday was the third. Thursday was the day that John Gilbert was hired 2 years ago. Was as far as the press conference, I should say. But they made the announcement and. I was there. So a lot of great things happening at East Carolina over the last couple of years.
Yeah, very unusual on the way that panned out in terms of almost a dual announcement. I know they weren't at the same time, but only right. In a couple of days or a few days apart. Yeah, very, very strange, but very, very excited to have those gentlemen in Greenville.
No question about it. Great to have them. And I know that certainly we were talking football, and right there, a lot of great football still ahead, but we're in the basketball season, and Bubba, the Pirates have a big matchup on Saturday.
We do. A very solid Radford program coming to Williams Arena, Minji's Coliseum. Don't just think, hey, they're 0-3. We should be able to just chalk up a win. Do I think we probably win? Yes. But this is a very solid Radford ball team. They have been very competitive in their three games thus far. And they played at Virginia Tech, and then they lost a three-point game to Norfolk State, and also I want to say by 8 or 9 to James Madison in a game I think that was closer than that throughout. And that was in a MTE taking place in Harrisonburg, if I'm not mistaken. So Mike Jones has – been a consistent winner there with the Highlanders, and I'm very excited to hopefully improve to 3-0 on Saturday afternoon.
To preview that matchup, we had the opportunity to catch up with the 10th year head coach of Radford, Mike Jones, and let's go to that conversation right now.
Well, there's a big basketball game on Saturday, and in fact, we're Greenville with East Carolina, right, Bubba?
Absolutely. And the Radford Highlanders coming in, and right now very excited to be joined by their 10th year head coach, Mike Jones. Coach, welcome into the program.
Well, thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
No doubt, Coach, wanted to have you on. Obviously, big game on Saturday, and you've done a nice job with the program there at Radford. 10 years, there's something to be said for tenure and the stability of a program, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, it's a blessing, first of all, to keep a job for 10 years. And, you know, I've been very fortunate with the support that I've had from, you know, our administration, particularly our athletic director. So you know, continuing to try to build this program up to be something respectable and, you know, keep fighting for those inches every day, man. And that's what we've been doing.
Coach, Dave references the success you've had there at Radford, have won 20-plus games in 5 out of the last 6 seasons. You did lose a lot, what, about 85% of your scoring off last year's roster. And, yes, you're off to an 0-3 start, but you've been very competitive. We're competitive at Virginia Tech in addition to your other 2 games. And so tell us about your ball club thus far.
Well, I think we're a little better defensively than we are offensively right now, and still trying to figure some things out on that side. We didn't have much scoring coming back from last year, so it's something that, you know, it's going to take a while for these guys to kind of figure out how to score in college basketball. Defensively, you know, we've played pretty hard, and we've been pretty solid in the first 3 games for the most part, but, you know, we've had lapses. So, you know, really it's both sides of the ball. We've got a lot of improvement to do with such a young and inexperienced team that, you know, it's going to take a while, but these games, you know, are important for us as we get ready for our league, particularly down the stretch in January and February. And we just, you know, we're working toward being a really good team by then.
How's things going for you guys so far with, you know, I didn't know your schedule preseason. I know you've played 3 games. Were those the 3 games that were scheduled? Have you had any alterations so far? It seems like everybody's had something canceled already.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's inevitable this year in college basketball, men and women, that you're going to have some interruptions. We've lost 2 games that were scheduled, one of which was supposed to be yesterday, I believe. You know, but the 3 games that we played were regularly scheduled. We were able to get those in, which is great. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll continue to, you know, to be COVID free or at least have enough guys to go and play the game.
Coach, talk about that very thing with COVID-19. I know it's been tough on the program. How have you guys fared? And also the second part of the question, COVID related, how has that affected recruiting?
Well, you know, recruiting is non-existent. You know, I'll say that second part of that question. You know, no one's allowed to go anywhere. We actually were affected by it in the fall, spring and summer, and, you know, signed a couple guys that, you know, we didn't get a chance to see as much as we would have liked, but that was just the nature of it, having to do it online and watching film and things like that. So that makes it tough. I mean, we always like to see guys, you know, live, and we didn't get a chance to do that as much this past summer, and it's been the same way in the fall. So, but everybody has to deal with it, and so, you know, it's something that we all have to figure out. But as far as how, you know, how it's affected us, our school started early. We started August 12th, and we were done before Thanksgiving. So all the students are gone now. Our guys get to concentrate on just being basketball players for the next 2 months, really. We don't start school until mid-January after Martin Luther King. So, you know, we get a chance to, you know, have these guys here and hopefully keep them, you know, keep them COVID-free.
Coach, before we start breaking down the matchup with the Pirates, wanted to kind of tag on to the question about the COVID situation and dealing with, you know, like you said, you're not recruiting, it's non-existent. Is there anything you've learned from this situation, having to, you know, limited access to your players at points, and I'm sure having to do things like we're doing right now through Zoom? Is there anything you've learned through all this that you'll take with you moving forward when hopefully things get back to normal at some point?
Yeah, I mean, just an appreciation for, you know, getting the chance to be together, you know, to, you know, be with each other, the opportunity to play basketball. You know, we had several guys that tested positive right around the start of practice, and so those guys were out for a while, and, you know, just to be having the game taken away from you by something that you can't control, makes you appreciate it when you do get to play. And I think that's the one thing that not only, you know, I will take with me, you know, when things kind of get back to normal, but I think our team will as well, which is important, man. You know, we, you know, God puts us here and gives us this day that we have today, and that's all that's guaranteed. So there has to be a level of appreciation for everything that we get and every opportunity that we have.
No doubt. And one more thing I wanted to add on to that about COVID. The coaching staffs is something a lot of people haven't talked about. You guys aren't 19-year-old athletes. You know, I'm 40 years old. I'm just getting over a battle with COVID. It put me on my butt for about 3 weeks with fever. Thank God I didn't have too much breathing difficulties, but a lot of fever, a lot of aches and pains, a lot of just no energy at all. As a coach and as a coaching staff, is that a worry for you guys personally, not just about the players, but your own health?
Well, I think it has to be a worry for everybody. You know, 275 people, 1,000 people have died here in the United States. And so I think it's a concern for myself, for my staff, for everyone in our athletic department. And, you know, we're fortunate. We have a great medical team led by our athletic trainer and our team doctor. Those guys have done a tremendous job of, you know, trying to give us the protocols and all the work that they put in to try to keep our athletes safe and our coaches safe. Has been tremendous. It's been very much appreciated. And, you know, they've done a terrific job of getting us to this point where we played 3 games already. So hopefully that can continue. But the players have a role in that too, you know, in being responsible when they're away from us. And, you know, for the most part, we've done that.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about as far as COVID-19 as well, being that you're a basketball mind, one of the things that I'm worried about is having a tournament, having no March Madness was crazy. I can't imagine for you guys, obviously with being a basketball coach and players, but talk about that as far as the basketball aspect of things. And also financially, it hurts the rest of the sports at a school without having a tournament.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the NCAA depends very heavily on that tournament. And so they're going to do everything they can to make sure it happens this year. I don't know if they can afford to miss it 2 years in a row. And so, you know, for us, you know, we do rely on our program, particularly to raise money through guarantee games. And this is one such game, you know, with East Carolina. And, you know, we've got to, you know, help to fund the rest of the department, which is great. I mean, I love our department. I love our coaches. We have some great coaches and student athletes and you know, whatever we can do to help, we're a team player and you know, certainly want to do everything we can to make sure that our athletic department is viable and that this is a big part of it. So it's important that not only we play these individual guarantee games, but it's also important that we get to, you know, play in a tournament or, you know, the tournament happens so that, you know, we can bring that money in from the NCAA to the athletic department to keep us running. So, yeah, all that stuff's important, man. And, you know, we're happy to do our part.
And you mentioned the game with the Pirates this weekend being a guarantee game. What do you make of Joe Dooley and his Pirates so far? Off to a 2-0 start, nice win over Charlotte to start the season, then the win over North Carolina Wesleyan. Just watching them as a fan, I think we've played well at times. I you know, even though we're 2-0, I don't think we've played to our potential yet. What do you make of the Pirates?
Well, first of all, Joe Dooley, I've known him for a long time, competed against him when he was an assistant at Kansas and I was an assistant at VCU. We played in the Elite Eight. So, you know, even before that, when he was head coach at East Carolina the first time, I think, you know, I've known him for quite a long time and he's always been an excellent coach. So, you know, we know his team's going to be prepared. I mean, just watching them, you can see that they're much improved from a year ago. They've got, you know, a lot of guys back. And so they know the system better and they're, you know, obviously able to perform better in that system. They're very deep and they're very big and they're very athletic and long. So, you know, that's going to pose a problem for our team, you know, because we're a lot smaller, our league. Is a smaller league than their league. So, you know, we're going to have our work cut out for us because of, you know, their length and size. And, you know, we're going to have to, you know, find a way to combat that. But, you know, I'm excited for the opportunity to play against a well-coached team.
Man, what are your thoughts on Jaden Gardner? Where would you know, being a coach from the outside, I always kind of like to ask this about Jaden. You know, you see a lot of different players from a lot of different schools, from a lot of different leagues. Where do you put Jaden Gardner, you know, in terms of his level of play nationally?
Well, he reminds me a lot of a guy like P.J. Tucker. You know, I recruited P.J. Tucker out of high school. He ended up going to Texas and obviously had a great career so far in the league. You know, he's just he's a big, strong, aggressive, physical dude, man, who can score in a lot of ways. Consistent scorer. You know, I watched Jaden in high school and loved him there. You know, he's gotten better and better each year, bigger and stronger. I mean, he looks like a – you know, trying to tackle a refrigerator inside, man, trying to keep him from his low post position. And so, you know, he's not only going to pose problems for us, I'm sure he's going to pose problems for the rest of their league the rest of the year. So, you know, he's definitely a focal point, whoever plays East Carolina.
Coach, obviously a very small sample size, just three ball games, but talk about, you know, who have you been able to rely on thus far, and, you know, who were you anticipating being able to depend on entering the season?
You know, we don't have a lot of veterans. Even our veteran players didn't play a lot of minutes last year. So we're figuring it out right now. You know, consistency is something that's going to take some time. Right now, some of the players that played last year, Lewis Jokum, Kyrie Walker, and Quentin Morton Robinson, those guys have, you know, shown flashes of what they're capable of doing. None of them have been consistent over the three games. Q didn't end up playing in the first game. He had some migraines, but he played the last two and, you know, showed some flashes. And so those guys are going to lead the way for us in most nights throughout the season. Our freshmen have played a lot early on, which is good experience for them. And they've also done some really good things. I'm excited about that crew, all three of them. And then, you know, some of our newcomers out of junior college ranks, those guys, you know, haven't done as much yet, but sometimes it takes those JUCOs a little longer to kind of get acclimated. So I anticipate they're going to be contributors. So, you know, we're at the point now where just three games in, we're still trying to learn who is going to be, you know, our best scorers, who's going to be our best rebounder, who's going to be our best defender. And we have about seven games before we figure that out, before we really get into the meat of our league schedule.
And, Coach, you're certainly – I know you're young, but you're talented. And one of the great things about it, the only way that you can ever learn is to be on the court. It's like if you're driving, the only way you can learn to drive is behind the wheel, as they say. In this particular case, it looks like this will be a great experience on the road against East Carolina. You've had a nice job – done a nice job of in a tough world of COVID that we live in with a non-conference schedule.
Yeah, thanks. We, you know, we are excited to play. I mean, you know, as many games as we can play, we're going to try to play. You're allowed seven if you're in an MTE, and right now we have three, so we're just trying to get to those other four. We actually start our league a little earlier this year. We'll play a couple league games against Longwood here in December, but the meat of our schedule is after Christmas, and if we can, you know, get these guys some valuable experience in these non-conference games, I think it can only help us.
Coach, talk about your league. You referenced Longwood, but I know that conference has been very solid in recent years, and we've talked to the likes of Coach Tim Kraft and then also Mike Morrell.
Yeah, great league, man. Really underrated. You know, great coaches. They challenge you every night. You know, there are no nights off, as they say, when you go on the road or when those – folks come and try to steal one it from your home court, you got to be ready. And, you know, the two that you mentioned, Kraft and Morrell, those guys have really solid programs. Coach Kraft, you know, obviously has been to the tournament here the last couple of years, beat us in the championship game. He does a great job. And I know he was an assistant at East Carolina for a while. Got a ton of respect for all the coaches in the league, but particularly, you know, Coach Morrell and Coach Kraft, you know, they really make us work hard, you know, for everything that we get when we play these guys.
Coach, as far as the game on Saturday, what are the keys to victory to beat the Pirates?
Well, we got to make sure we take care of the ball, something that, you know, we pride ourselves on in the past. We haven't done a great job so far in the year. We've got to do a great job of taking care of the ball and making sure we get a good shot every time down. And then we got to share the ball. You know, we can't, you know, go in there. They have some big shot blockers. We got to go in there and you know, share the ball until we get a great shot and not settle for good ones. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, we really got to stop the transition defense and try our best to keep them from pounding us in the paint with their size. You know, those are going to be big challenges for our team early in the year. And, you know, we need to do it, you know, well, because that's going to come into play in our league as well. So it's a good opportunity for us to learn.
All right, Coach, good luck to you Saturday in Greenville against the Pirates and the rest of the season. And hopefully we can talk to you again real soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
That was the 10th year head coach of the Radford Highlanders, Mike Jones. Coach, we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk about your program as well as Saturday afternoon's matchup with East Carolina. On Thursday afternoon, some scheduling news was released on the basketball front, some time changes, and also tip-off times being announced. So check out ecupirates.com for the latest in terms of the ECU men's basketball schedule. That will do it for this show. We appreciate all of our guests. Appreciate my co-hosts, Dave Richmond and Kyle Barber. Remember to follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Until next time, we appreciate you listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. And as always, go Pirates!